Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs.
This week, we're speaking to Jayan and Trino from Culture UK. Hey, guys. Thanks so much for joining us, Jay and Trino. How's everyone doing?
Good.
We're good. Thanks for having us.
We're good.
Thanks for coming on.
Sorry, I just jumped in there.
I was thinking for everybody.
So Trina said, and I did it, and then lifted it. I was going to say, I know it's
Wednesday, but it's actually Tuesday, right? I don't even know what day of the week it is right now. But yeah, today we are discussing Black hair. And I think Black hair is something that's really embedded within, or perceived to be embedded within, Black women's identity, and it provides many women with a sense of self. It's really important to us. You know, Black hair is beautiful, it's versatile, as much as it isn't always appreciated. You know, there's political elements to it. There's such a vast kind of discussion that we could go down when we're talking about Black hair, but I think we're going to have kind of go down a little bit of memory lane and talk about each of our experiences with Black hair and how our relationships individually and collectively overlap or don't overlap, as the case may be. So thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
I think the first question that we always ask guests is, how would you like to be introduced and what makes you a dope Black woman? So I'll let you guys answer that first.
How would I like to be introduced? Bad girl, Jayan. No, no, for real. If you could do that, that'd be great.
I love it.
But no, I feel like Tree and I are very similar. So I might say things that she probably would say as well, but like just multi-potentialites. We are people with multiple skills and multiple talent sets. We are co-founders of Culture, but also entrepreneurs. You know, we worked in different fields. So I'm just like a super, not superwoman, so I can go and save people, but like a superwoman in terms of the our tenacity and our determination. So yeah, bad gal Jay and a superwoman.
Love that.
Wow, how do I top that?
Bad gal Tree.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't it obvious?
Frida is fine, but yeah, go ahead with your bare self, that's fine. But it would have to boil down to just like what we are capable of, you know, and just like the fact that both of us just being in spaces where we wanted to see change or we wanted something different, so we created it. I think that's something that, yeah, makes us dope Black women. We create the things that we wish existed, really.
That is pretty fucking dope.
I love it.
So you guys have, Jay mentioned this about being kind of multi-potentialized and being multifaceted, which is something that we love here at Dope Black Women. And I know you guys have Culture, but you also have other platforms. So in addition to talking about how Culture began, getting that out of the way, how do you guys manage kind of being friends and business partners and running multiple platforms? Like, how do you do all of it?
We don't even know. Like, I'm not going to lie. It's not like there's a rule book, but I will say that we communicate very well. And we'll try and find solutions between us for problems. And that's the main thing. And we're both willing to do things. I think that's the main thing. And like, we don't have everything down pat, but we're always willing to learn and find a way around a problem. And that's how we work together for this. But I think in terms of just juggling everything, we just do it. Like, I don't know. Tree, how would
yeah,
you?
I mean, I feel like if there's something that you really want to do, you'll make time for it. I'm kind of like a big believer in that. So that's not to say that it's always easy. Like, there's plenty of times I'm like run off my feet. But for me, especially when I was working, it was like, I can't spend all these hours working on someone else's business and building someone else's dream and not find the time to build my own. So for me, it's like, I will find the time. So whether that's just being a bit more, you know, bit more strict or just like focusing a bit more on my time management. Sometimes it was a case of maybe having to get up a bit earlier so I could fit things in. It's like, if you really want to do something, you would make time to do it. Yeah, I'm just a big believer in that. So yeah, just a bit, just definitely being a bit more disciplined when it comes to time management. I think in general, when it comes to like us, how we work together, I think it's also just kind of like just having respect for one another, like just in general, and just kind of having those boundaries. There's times when, like, say if Jay's busy or whatever, like if she communicates that, then it's like, okay, cool, when I can just sort of take over on certain things. So I don't know, just having that understanding, and just like we're both busy people. Yeah,
that reminds me of me and Leanne.
That's why I asked the question, because we're young and we're just kind of starting in this kind of world, and it's like it's the two of us, and we do kind of do the same thing, I suppose, right, Shan? We kind of just pull weight for each other, and fortunately we haven't had any major disagreements yet, but so it's nice to learn from you guys, because obviously you've done well, just the two of you kind of doing this and succeeding and creating such a powerful and important platform. So how did it start? Yeah, how did Curlture get started?
Well, I mean, I think to tie those two answers together for this one and the previous one is also that we've been friends since we were like 14. So to work together and have that relationship makes things easier than I think maybe working with someone that you don't know. Mm. Or, you know, like it's completely different. We have the same ethos. We have the same goal. We have the same love for our community. And so that's how it also works that way. Mm. Essentially, we were both on our natural hair journeys initially, but a lot of the content we were consuming, you know, on YouTube, on social media, was very American. And during the time, Tree and I would kind of talk between ourselves, talk about products and stuff, and we were kind of wondering, where is the British representation for this? And there was some, but it wasn't prevalent. Like, it wasn't something you'd see on the surface or when you Googled it, kind of thing. So we created Curlture to basically encompass the hair discussions we have, but also the ones about our culture as well, as Black women, Black British women, Black women of Caribbean descent, to talk about, you know, how your hair is, but also how important your skin is, and how important that is to your self-identification, and how important that is to your self-esteem, and all of that, those kind of questions, and that, you know, Black women ask since centuries ago and still today, really.
Why do you think that is? Like, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned the way it's kind of been Americanized, that, you know, even if you look at YouTubers to this day, there are the obvious ones, and there are people that do it really well, but there's still a lack of Black British beauty bloggers, of Black British hairstylists, of Black British. Do you think we rely too heavily on the American influence? We're just like, oh, it's already there and it's already done well. There doesn't need to be a Black British, you know, platform for this kind of thing.
I mean, that may be part of it, but I also feel like the way we consume things is a bit different. I feel like being on the journey and, yeah, being on this journey in the natural hair scene in the UK, I think that's something that we've come across along the way. Like, the way, because we've, like, been to events and we've been out in America, etc., when it comes to like natural hair scene and obviously experiencing it here. And I feel like the way we just like consume things is just really different. Yeah, I feel like there's always like things tend to like fade out quite quickly over here. I don't know. I feel like still to this day, we kind of don't really know the reason why. But obviously, I mean, America's bigger anyway, and they have a lot of like the brands are based there, and the budget that they will put into like, whether it's events and all that kind of stuff, is just like on a much grander scale. So here it's kind of like we always kind of get like the leftovers. So it sometimes it just feels like it's not as exciting, and it doesn't really like capture as much. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like the ball just stops rolling after a certain period. So it feels like it's a bit harder to keep that momentum up. So I think there's a few things that contribute to it, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
About like being on a natural hair journey, and I was interested to kind of know, both your hairs are like appearing in the actual natural state now, but did your hair used to be permed before? Like, what do you mean by joining a natural hair journey? Was that just becoming more interested and invested in like Black natural hair?
Yeah, so my hair's always been, so I've never relaxed my hair, but just in terms of I transitioned, so like my hair was heat damaged, so I would wash my hair would literally be straight from all the heat damage. And on top of the heat damage, I had like dyed my hair blonde. So it also had just been completely stripped and it was just awful. So I had to transition from that, from my hair being that state, to it being like in its natural state, basically. So yeah, not from it being permed, but still a transitional period.
Yeah. Oh my God, I remember the first time I dyed my hair blonde. I don't know who I thought I was. Like, I was Becky or Charlotte. It was just going to be fine and it was just going to wash out. And it damaged my hair so badly. I don't think it's been the same since.
Yeah, it absolutely, like, my hair just broke. There was so much breakage. Literally, it was like just under my ears. It was awful. So that's what I mean. Like, there was definitely a transitional period to get my hair to be healthy again. Like, I still had to wait for the regrowth and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah,
it was the same for me as well. I didn't dye my hair, but I used to straighten it all the time. Like, it was a thing for me where, it's not that I hated my texture, but I just didn't like the fact that it shrunk, which is therefore another way of hating your texture. So in order to show the length, which everyone's focused on, you know, long hair, long hair, long hair, I straightened it all the time just to show the length of my hair. And it's so weird to me that now, it's so funny, it's like a full circle moment, because now that my hair's natural, it's been longer than any other time in my life. And I've not cared about it. I've cut it like four times. And so it's just, for me, that was the main thing as well, transitioning from a heat damaged state, just like Tree. And just, yeah, we went through like the whole Brazilian blowout period as well. Do you remember, Tree?
With the, oh my God.
I definitely did that as well. And it takes forever for your curls to come back, right? Like, I was waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm like, curls, just come back. And they just went for months on end. And I think I ended up cutting my hair in order to get the curls to grow back just quite naturally.
Yeah, it doesn't revert back the way they sort of tried to tell you it did. Like, oh yeah, you just wash your hair and it reverted back.
Lies.
Lies. So yeah, we had to transition from that as well. That's true. I even forgot about that.
But Jay, when you were talking about like wanting to straighten your hair for it to be longer, where did that sort of idea come from? Did you go to like a predominantly white school?
I did at sixth form, actually, and that's when I started doing it the most. Yeah, that's actually so true, isn't it, Tree? Trinity. I went to Trinity sixth form in South Woodford, Bun Trinity, and it was very much like the white girls were the avant-garde, you know, of what's that word, of en vogue, you know, that phrase. And you know, they, and so subconsciously, I think just to fit in and just to feel more aligned with the school, and it's a Catholic school as well, which is completely if you know me, I don't do religion, so it's completely opposite as well. And to fit in, I kind of did that a lot as well. And so I think, yeah, I did go to a predominantly white school. Yeah. And that was really the time where it started happening the most.
Like, I've got a little sister, and when I do her hair, there was a period of time when she'd always want her hair done in a way, but she would attribute it to one of her friends at school. And then when I dropped off to school one day and saw the friend was white. And I was so the issue here is you're thinking that her hair looks nicer than your hair. And they both have equally as long hair, but it was just a particular style. So where I would do her hair and like tie it in a bun, think it would be neater and last longer at school, she'd rather have it out and like flowing. But like, you know, with black hair, you can't really go out and have it flowing. When you come back, your hair is not flowing. It's a mess. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It would be.
Yeah. I wouldn't agree. It depends.
I guess what you mean is like black hair doesn't naturally flow in the way that you imagine, like a girl with white long hair flipping it over her shoulder.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Yeah. But it's so funny. That whole argument about length is so interesting that, you know, people, we've grown up in a Western world, so obviously we see like long hair as healthy hair and good hair, but actually like a lot of black hair like doesn't just like grow straight and downwards. And that's definitely like something I had to deal with, because I was like, my hair doesn't grow, like it doesn't look healthy, it doesn't look clean, it doesn't look sharp. I was like, actually no, it just doesn't grow the way white hair does, that's all.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like especially when, like, if that's what you're surrounded by, you're not surrounded by a lot of kids like that have your hair texture, your hair type, then yeah, you kind of just see what they like, the way they do their hair, and feel like, oh well, why can't my hair do that? Or even when it comes like products that they're using, and because I remember I used to use like all these like gels and stuff and expect it to have the same like effect it would on my hair, and it just didn't. Like, so yeah, there's a lot of unlearning.
Also just the way, like the terms that we talk about our hair, like growth, it's immediately subconsciously built in our mind that it grows like a straight line, like that's how hair grows, like that's it's the way we've coded ourselves, and just with terms that even don't have any leaning towards ethnicity or anything, like growth, length, all these terms are coded on white expectancies. And so even when you're just talking about that at school, like if you're talking about hair growth, that's the immediate thing that you think of, and that's the immediate thing you see. And that happens with everything. Like Trina was saying with the products, like even with the normal tame your hair and all of these coded languages that you have. So, I mean, you can't really blame a lot of people for having that mindset, especially for a period of time if they're like, you know, went to schools like me and stuff like that.
It's interesting because for me, I grew up in Jamaica, and I guess the post-colonial kind of setting influences, and then also the fact that my mom was not black, like my dad's black, but my mom's Asian. And so growing up, she didn't really know what to do with my hair. And so I would genuinely kind of try to embrace kind of hairstyles that I would see around me. So I'd embrace cane rows, I would want braids and more traditionally black hairstyles, quote unquote. But my mom was, my parents in general, because my dad was like an older post-colonial 80-year-old man, and my mom was not from the country. So they were very opposed because they thought it would have an impact on how I was perceived or my capacity to be perceived as like a good student. So I remember one time I had a sports day and I came home with cane rows in my hair, and my parents flipped out. They were so angry at me. They were pissed. They were like, don't do that ever again, because they genuinely, not because they had a problem with the hairstyle necessarily, although I'm sure there's that underlying factor, but because they thought I would be perceived as a hoodlum or be perceived as someone who isn't, because living in this post-colonial setting, traditional hairstyles, as you've heard, I'm sure you've seen like dreadlocks being banned in high schools and stuff like that, now are perceived to be associated with people from a lower socioeconomic status, or, you know, so straight hair is the order of the day. And I think it's only now within the past decade that black women in Jamaica are actually, well, a certain group of black women are starting to embrace their natural hair. I don't know if that is something that you guys have noticed too, in terms of the natural hair movement across the board in the UK. I mean, I definitely know quite a few women who are afraid to wear their natural hair to work.
See, this is, you know? This is the thing. I feel like, I think, I don't know, Tree, if you're going to agree with me, but like, I feel like we exist in a bubble, Tree and I, when it comes to natural hair. Like, there are the natural hair influencers, the events, the people, the brands. But outside of that, if you go outside of that, you know, there's not as much impact as you would think. And I feel like people are still uncomfortable to wear their hair naturally. Mm-hmm. They also still subscribe to a very unilateral version of feminine beauty. And so they feel like in order to be attractive, they have to look a certain way. And so that usually falls in with long hair or straight textured hair that, you know, you'd wear a wig or a weave. And so I feel like even though the movement has happened, I do feel like the UK has missed quite a substantial amount of impact. Like, again, if we're comparing the US, I do feel like that has been missed quite a bit. Not to say there hasn't been change, but yeah, there's still that. The same post-colonial stuff, because, you know, same people that are in Jamaica came over here and brought their kids. And, you know, my nan, I had the same trouble with my nan when I first went natural, when we first started culture, she laughed at me. And then now she's like, oh yeah, natural hair, no. But at the time she was busting up in my face, and I was like, okay, cool. And so it's still a work in progress. I mean, Tree, what do you think?
Yeah, no, definitely still a work in progress, because like when it comes to, like, even if I'm speaking personally, like from my family, like going to work, like this idea of like to look professional and how your hair should be, and it's straight or it's relaxed, or, you know, like this idea of like how your hair should be like neat and kept, and do you know what I mean? So it's like, I think between Jay and I, especially like from home, like with our families, we were the ones like re-educating them, do you know what I mean? As the younger generation of like, no, like our hair, can do a lot or is versatile. We can do different styles. Like, so even again, like Jay was saying with her nan, but even with me, like with my sister, with my mom, with my aunties, like now they're all natural just by us, like the things that we have done. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes it just takes that, it's just that representation, isn't it?
And not being afraid to call people out maybe on their bias. So that's one thing I had to notice with my family, is just to obviously not be disrespectful, because you have in Black communities you have the whole elder thing, but you know, tell them that no, I don't agree with you, and just leave it at that. And I feel like a lot of us don't do that. We kind of no, it's wrong, and you just have to hold your ground for a second.
Yeah. No, I definitely had to do a series of lessons with my mom. I remember, I don't know if you guys ever had bad haircuts or bad hairstyles or outrageous hairstyles, but my mom tried to cut me a bang once without realizing that she would have to straighten my hair. And so I woke up with this, or not woke up, but I went to school every day with this bang that was like sitting right here, like 2 inches above my head for a good year or so. And yeah, I don't know what, Shan, did your nan have issues with your hair? Are you guys going, what did she do about you?
She tried to get me to relax it when I was young, but my mom said no. My mom and my nan are quite opposite. My mom's very much, so when I first got weave, my mom cussed me out, and I say she shamed me so bad. And then my nan also was not for it either, because she was like, no, just relax your hair if you want it straight, kind of thing. So they were against the weave, but for different reasons. My nan was very much relaxing her hair a lot, and she's natural now as well, and I give her product all the time. And yeah, no, I never really had any mad haircuts, but she did try to relax my hair, and she was on it for a bit. Like, I remember my mom having to have a proper argument with her, saying like, no, you're not going to relax my child's hair. But yeah, not many weird haircuts.
Yeah, not haircuts. Like, even when I wanted to experiment my hair, I remember my mum for ages was telling me that I wasn't allowed to relax my hair, because when I saw it amongst my, like, my sister had her hair relaxed, so did my mum actually, all my cousins, it was like, I want my hair relaxed too. But it was funny, because growing up, I would always associate, like, having your hair relaxed with short hair. And at the time, my hair was really long as a child, so it was like, even though I wanted my hair relaxed, I didn't want my hair to be short. So even though it was like, I would ask her sometimes, but at the same time I was like, oh, but I don't want my hair to be short. I just associated the two, because they just didn't know how to look after it, so it would always break, so all their hair was short. So that's why I always associated, like, oh, if my hair is relaxed, it's gonna be short. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember my mom saying, like, not until I was 18 or something like that I could do it. But then by the time I got to 18, I didn't want to do it anyway. But at the same time, that is when I did experiment with dyeing my hair and all that kind of stuff. And my hair did break anyway. But growing up, it was never a thing of like going to hairdressers or going to get my hair cut. Like, my hair was always done at home. So kind of always grew up with this whole thing of like, you know, you do your hair yourself kind of thing. So yeah, no wild haircut, but just a lot of damage along the way.
Shan lives, did you guys have any crazy hairstyles going on back in the day?
In the hairdressers. And then once I started earning money, which was like 14, my mum was like, yeah, you can pay for this yourself. And then I remember going to the hairdressers, and we shouldn't outwardly say that, but I felt like that was the consent, that was what the vibe was. And I remember one day I needed to get a trim. I don't know where I was going or why it was so urgent, but I needed to get a trim that day. And so in Croydon, back in the day, and any of you guys from Croydon? Okay, well, for my Croydon
massive, I know it.
Croydon, back in the day, there used to be like loads of hairdressers on this high street.
It's not there anymore. I haven't been Croydon in years.
I don't go there, so I don't really know. But I went on this high street, like, let me just find a hairdresser who have time to give me a quick trim. I'll never do that again. Because I went there and they cut off my head. I've got a big head, yeah? Look at my big head. I literally was in the chair crying my eyes out. I was crying. I think I was like 16. I was crying my eyes out. I didn't leave the shop until mom came and got me. I was like, I'm not paying. I was fuming. I was like, mom, you can't pay. But they cut off my hair. The lady said, I thought you asked for a haircut.
Wow.
Stop it.
I wanted to be cut
as opposed to a trim.
It was all just mad. And it, after that day, I was like, you know what? never will I go cheap again, because as much as I was in hairdressers with my mum all the time, it was never like random hairdressers. It was like top quality salons. Do you get what I mean? So from and even now, I'm traumatized to this day. Like, no, like no exaggeration. Like, right now, I need a trim. And I'm like, I don't know.
I you do it yourself.
I'm scared, man.
I've got a video on it. Don't worry about it.
You got a video.
Don't worry about that. The URL. All right, maybe.
But no, honestly, it's so true that I've definitely experienced with, like, not even bad hairdressers. Like, hairdressers who just don't know how to deal with black hair. Like, it's, you know, they just never got trained in it. I don't think they do it on purpose. And so they'll give you a trim thinking it's a trim. And I'm like, girl, that's it, like a year to grow. Then you just chopped it off. I don't think they realize, like, it's not the same. It's not going to grow. And they're like, it'll grow back.
It's funny, I remember when I first moved to Birmingham looking for a hairdresser, and I literally called like 10 to 15 places, and the first question they asked me is, do you have Afro-Caribbean hair? And I was like, first of all, what the fuck does that mean? Like, what, like,
not straight,
what, yeah, what is the broad range that you're trying to encompass into one specific category? And then as soon as I said yes, they were like, sorry, we can't do it.
Oh, wow. In Birmingham.
Yeah. In Birmingham, of all places. Yeah, but this was like 12 years ago. So I know that things have shifted now, but still.
Wow.
It was a problem. And so shout out to Daniela, my girlfriend. She just started doing my hair for me, and probably better than any hairdresser could have done it anyway. So
there you go.
Hair looks really healthy.
That's the thing, yeah. Even when I find that, I just had a big distrust of black hairdressers, because I used to go in there, get my hair straightened, and that's when it started getting breaking off. And yeah, I just have a big distrust. Like, even when Tree and I have like dyed our hair in a in the past, we've only gone to really high quality salons to get our hair done, because we don't play that. Like, it's not, I'm literally not going to risk my life asking you for a trim. I'd rather do it myself, because I know how much I cut off, and I'm the person to blame. I'm not paying for someone to mess up my hair. So I understand that deep distrust. And it's also because, again, like, it's the beauty standards that a lot of hairdressers have. They're still aiming for this long, straight, you know, hide your texture look. You know, there's it's like 10 to 1 in terms of natural hair salons compared to salons that do hair, black hair, to look quote-unquote European. That's still that disproportionate service there. So it's harder for us to go and find salons that do that, and then even then, like, the price point is different.
And even now, I'm pretty sure it still happens, like, in terms of, like, people training with to become a hairstylist or whatever, and they adopt those practices for European hair to, you know, our hair, and it just is not the same. So I think there is something that exists now in terms of training for natural hair. I believe so. Maybe I need to check that. But obviously for so long there wasn't. So it was just like that, those practices that you had on European hair would just be try to just literally translate that to our hair, and it just wasn't the same. And that's where people just went wrong a lot of the time.
So I have a question about cutting hair, wet or dry?
Dry.
Because I hear a different answer every time I go to the hairdresser. It's like, let me cut your hair wet.
Dry? I've never heard dry.
Yeah.
Well, isn't it always wet?
No.
Uh-uh. No. And people always say, if you're going to cut my hair dry, they have to straighten it first. And I'm
no.
like,
because your hair shrinks, isn't it? So if it's wet, then you might end up cutting off more than you need to.
But then I guess where I have layers, it's clearer to see them when it's wet. Do you not think?
No, I feel like you should do it. Sorry, I was like, no.
You're like, no. Like,
if it depends on what look you're going for. If you wear your hair straight most of the time, maybe that's the best.
Oh, no, it also it also depends how you wear your hair. So, like, I don't wear my hair straight, so I don't have a need to do it in that way, or for it to be so perfect, because my hair's, do you know what I mean? I don't wear my hair straight. If you're someone that wears your hair straight all the time, and you can then clearly see if that shit goes wrong. Oh, sorry.
Now you can swear.
When you can clearly see if that goes wrong. Yeah. Then of course, then you might want to do it different. But if someone like wears their hair curly all the time, then you wouldn't need to straighten that first to cut it.
Yeah. And the reason why as well is because you need to see the shape of your hair, and different curls curl differently in your head. You have multiple curl patterns. So if you're cutting your hair straight and one curl actually is longer in terms of its pattern, it's elongated, and the other one shrinks up more, you're going to end up with a mismatch, because where you cut it when it's wet, like my hair elongates when it's wet. So if I cut when wet, I'm going to cut off much more than what I expect. That's why I have to do it dry. And I need the shape. If you want volume, you have to do it when it's curly. So yeah, that's a myth that's still being uprooted in terms of, Trina and I have got our hair cut multiple times from different salons and we've only got it done dry. Only.
Wow. Mad. Yeah. That is a new one for me.
I wouldn't trust someone cutting my hair wet. I know that. I know they'll be taking off too much. Like,
that's a slappable offense right there. Yeah. Right?
Like, don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
I have a curveball question. Do you think that men need to be a part of this movement? Black men need to be part of this movement in any shape or form? I mean, I'm asking the question because I was having a conversation with my boyfriend recently, and he has dreads, and he also works in the corporate world. And it's something he's thinking about a lot lately as he kind of, you know, reaches more towards his 30s. It's like, what am I going to do long term? And it's definitely something he thinks about. I don't know whether he has to think about to the same level as black women, but I think there's something there.
Yeah, of course.
Do you think, is culture mainly, like, is it for women? Or, like, do you think about your male audience?
The reason why there's a focus on women is because the way women look has been a focus of society in general, so that's why. But I do feel like men have to be included in that conversation, not just for themselves, but for the kids that they will eventually raise, the boys that they will raise, because the boys will go and portray that their insecurities and project those onto women and other young little boys as well. And so everyone has to be involved in that conversation. But the way men deal, because women are automatically presumed to focus more on how they look than men, that's why there's that imbalance there in general. Like, you know, magazines are about women, you know, most influencing is mostly about women and all of this stuff. So
and don't get it twisted, men do care about this stuff. Like, I guess they wouldn't necessarily, okay, fair enough, they might not be sitting on a podcast like this talking about it perhaps, but they do. And one thing that like highlighted that for me was during lockdown, when men couldn't go to like the barbers or whatever and get their hair done, and all these guys were growing out their hair, and people were really like, they really do care about this kind of stuff, you know? So yeah, for me, I'm like, don't get it twisted. Like, they do. It's just, I guess the conversation maybe isn't the same, but there are definitely times when we get men like in our DMs asking us, whether it's for them or yeah, like their kids or stuff like that, you know? So I think, yeah, I think, like, for example, they shouldn't have to be like, oh, let me just quickly go in the DMs to ask because I don't want to be asking in public or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But I think they definitely need to be included in the conversation. And exactly what Jay said, I think, if not for them, but also for the younger generation.
Another thing is that, you know, I guess the same idea, post-colonial ideas that we have, we also project on men and about their long hair and masculinity. And that's something that also we should talk about, and we've talked about on our platform, in terms of like, leave black men's hair alone. If they want to have long hair, that doesn't make them more feminine, that makes them who they are, and they just have long hair. I know my younger brother, when he was young, he had the most beautiful silky hair, like we didn't know where it came from, and he still has it now, but it's so gorgeous. And when he was young, because people used to call him a girl, he wanted to cut it off, and then he grew it back out, and now he's on the wave thing. But like, for the most part, it was people's comments towards his hair as a young black boy, talking about his lack of masculinity as a young black boy because of his long hair. So those are the kind of conversations that they have to also discuss and uproot and have these kind of discussions that we're having as well. But again, there's that barrier in terms of men are not supposed to care about how they look and stuff like that.
The bald patches are a real issue for men in this world. Like, so many men I know talk about or worry about how quickly they'll lose their hair, or, you know, and what to do when their hair does start thinning. Is that something that can be prevented? Is it just genes? Is it?
I mean, that could be a multitude of things. Even when I have a friend who had bald patches, and he asked me to make him a growth oil, and I made it for him. But I thought the main thing was that, which is where mine came from, is the fact that he wasn't being emotionally open. His stress was coming through his scalp. And so we talked about what was going on during the life and stuff like that. And I was like, you need to let go. You need to let things go, because it's affecting your hair. And then there's it's the same with women. Like, I know men have a propensity to become, you know, bald or have bald spots, but there's still the same range of causes as with women.
This is the Dope Black Women Podcast.
You guys talked about this a little bit before, about kind of European standards, and you guys embrace so many different hairstyles. Like, it's so crazy to see all the different things, the different types of hairstyles that you guys come up with. It's crazy. I'm still waiting to try that long braid with the cloth braided in between. That's my next but do you think there's a fine line, because you guys wear extensions and stuff like that as well, is there a fine line between, or what is the fine line between kind of wearing embracing wigs, weaves, relaxers, anything that isn't quote unquote natural, and as a way of kind of amplifying being proud of your hair versus kind of conforming to the traditional standards? Like, where do you guys find the balance between the two? Because that's often what's told, right? It's like, if you wear a weave or if you straighten your hair, you're self-loathing.
Oh, wow. Self-loathing. If I'm being honest, I really kind of hate like the divide. I think it's just because, like, over the years, just speaking to women and what they do with their hair, like, there's so many different reasons why people switch up their hair or why people wear wigs and weave. Like, there's just, I think you can't automatically put it down to self-loathing as an example, or, you know, oh, you hate your hair or whatever it is, like, hate your blackness.
Oh, no, I just think that's the common perception.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And that's exactly what I mean. Like, when people, like, commonly just bought, like, reduce it down to that one thing, I just think, like, it's just a load of bullshit, basically. Like I said, there's so many different reasons. So for me personally, it's like, I don't see it like that. I'm kind of, like I said, we experiment a lot when it comes to hairstyles. Even, like, I know there's loads of people that they might want to experiment with color, and that's why that's maybe their reason, or whatever it may be. There's so many different reasons. So I think it's like, it's not really fair to just sort of look at someone and be like, oh, this is how you view yourself. And it's the same vice versa. Someone with natural hair, you can't just automatically assume, like, yeah, you're quote unquote woke because you have your hair natural. So yeah, there's always those kind of assumptions. And yeah, I don't really, I think, again, over the years meeting so many people, I think it's just been proven that that's just like a load of rubbish.
I think for me, I'm like on both sides of the fence, because I feel like there is a lot of cognitive dissonance when it comes to beauty. Again, like I said, there's a femininity that people lean towards. It's always has this one look, like, you know what the Black British influencer look is, and everyone kind of goes for that look. Like,
it's so true.
I'm lying. Like, it's not to shade anyone at all, but that's the typical look that you find. Like, Trina and I went to a WizKid concert, and like, literally, we were like,
you remember that? Oh my god.
Yeah, because everyone looked the same.
It was me and Jay with our natural hair. We looked around. We were like, what is this?
Literally. So like, whilst like, everyone can switch it up, like, you see us switch it up, it's not what you do, it's the why you do it. And we can never comment on someone else's look just by seeing them once. You have to see their pattern of behavior and how often they use this hair, or how often they wear a wig. And then that's when you start to ask the question, why? And that's when you start to get the reason. But just from judging off of a first look, you can't do that. But I won't deny that there is a link between how people perceive themselves and how people project themselves outwardly.
Yeah. I think, like you said, it's all about your intentions. Like, if you want to wear your 16-inch straight weave and flow about, that's absolutely fine. If you enjoy that, it's all good. But then, you know, and I this happens a lot on Twitter. Sometimes I think, like, okay, you said on Twitter, would you actually ever say in real life, do these conversations actually ever leave Twitter? But, you know, like, it's like, oh, but you couldn't leave the hair with your house with your natural hair, or you couldn't leave the house with cane rolls. It's like, make those decisions for yourself, but, you know, you can't judge other people for making those decisions. Like you said, intentions. But I was going to ask, you know, these conversations happen a lot online, and then the kind of the self-hate kind of ravels online and on Twitter. Do you think it kind of just exists in that little vacuum, and it doesn't really happen in the real world? Like, for example, like, people make fun of Cardi B when she's not wearing a wig or a weave, when she has her natural hair out. It's like, would you ever have those conversations with someone face to face in real life?
Like, I feel like, if you think about some of the trash people you find on the internet, I genuinely think they have their friendship circle that empowers them to make those comments in person, and therefore they feel like they can go and do it online, because online you've got more visibility. So if you're doing it online, I feel like you're saying this to your friends, because why would you not say it in private and then say it in public? Does that make
sense? Do you think so? Definitely think the opposite. I feel like people talk the most online. I don't think people would then come out and say, wait, do you mean saying it to their friends or just saying it to random people?
Like, not to their friends, to their friends. Like, that's where their mindset is, like, cared for in that circle, and then therefore they feel empowered to say it online. They might not walk up to a random person and be like, yo, yeah, here's shit in it. But, like, they'll just, in their friendship circle, that mindset's allowed to thrive. They're not they're not checked, which is why I feel like they can
say it online. Like, I'm not really on Twitter like that, but I do feel like there is this kind of, like, culture on Twitter, like, the way people just want to bust jokes or whatever.
And like, anything's up for grabs online.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of feel like that's kind of, like, an online thing. I've not really seen, again, maybe I'm not on it as much, but I have not really seen that kind of same, I don't even know what I'll describe it as, but I've not really seen that in person. I feel like it's very much an online thing.
Twitter's the wild, wild west.
It honestly is, because I'll see stories online on Twitter of like women who have never shown their partner their real hair, and those kind of stories. I'm like, but I don't know anyone in real life would actually does that or says that. I don't know if you just like, I don't know. It feels like people say things on Twitter they never talk about in real life almost. It's like a diary for some people.
I don't doubt that happens though. I like history.
Yeah,
I has to have taken a hold, so I don't doubt that happens.
I definitely know girls who and I was thinking to myself,
I haven't seen her hair since secondary school.
See,
like ever. And in my head, I was thinking,
wow.
When I saw part of her hair the other day, like she wears beads.
Sorry,
and I saw part of it. I saw like the leave out bit, and I was like, your hair is proper damaged. And I was thinking to myself, it's not my place to tell you, but also I need to tell you. Because the level of damage it is, soon she's not going to be able to wear weaves. Do you understand what I mean? Like, it's not going to cover anything. And part of me is like, she's a friend who I look at as very confident, very like got her shit together. That's how she appears to like people around her and like anyone she meets, really. She's quite a confident person. And I just feel like in myself, there's something there that I want to have a conversation about, but I don't even know what the conversation is. Because for me as your friend, I'm literally one of her closest friends. To have never seen your hair since we were 15, 14, that is mad. To me, that's very crazy. Do you get what I mean? Like, I find that quite a bad relationship to have towards hair. And obviously, I'm looking at it from, I don't know the ins and outs. She might think it's fine, and maybe she happens to have it out when I'm not there. Who knows? I can't tell her what she does about life all the time. But that's just something that I've been aware of, that I find very kind of uncomfortable. But I find the whole conversation with hair quite weird to navigate, because I've got friends who are like on the natural hair movement, and for me, they feel that talking to them about natural hair, I find uncomfortable, because it's almost like they're anti-weaves. So they're like, yeah, natural hair, let's show our beauty. And then they'll be like, but if you wear weaves, you're trying to, and to me, that conversation is very uncomfortable. And I feel like a lot of people I meet in the natural hair movement have that sort of narrative. Obviously, they're not all like that, but a lot of them have that narrative, and I find it very frustrating, because that's not what it's about at all.
That's what, for me and Trina's platform, is one thing. One of our ethos is that you should feel confident without what you're putting on, but feel free to put it on. You see what I mean? Like, we can wear a long braid, we can wear a ponytail, but we still feel confident in ourselves to be who we are naturally. And I think that's the main thing. Like, no one's going to cuss you if you're putting on whatever you want to put on. And there's always that, I feel like as a friend, you should definitely have that discussion. Trina and I saw someone the other day, he's an old friend of mine, and she was with a friend, and her friend had some really bad makeup on. And you know when the flashback looks like that, and if the shades are way too low. And we were having a discussion, like, I would hope you would tell me, like, if I look like that. Because as a friend, I feel like you should be looking out for that person, even if they don't like what they're going to hear. Sometimes it's the truth, and sometimes it's your perspective, and like having those discussions, I think, is key to friendship. And it might not be easy, but I feel like, you know, having that discussion around her hair should be something that maybe you should try, but it depends on how you feel about it and how she reacts as well. That's not an easy thing to do, because what you got to understand is that we've been programmed with a programming that has, and this sounds very hotepish, but a program that has self-defense is like an antivirus. So anyone telling you something about wearing your natural hair, there's an immediate defense there. I had it when I was going through like my whole straight hair set thing, like, why are you straightening your hair? Like, I had a defense, like, I love my hair, what do you mean? But it's something that you have to have a discussion around and just poke holes and see how they actually feel.
In the natural hair movement, another thing that I think a lot of people talk about a lot or highlight a lot is like 4C hair, I put in stars, yeah. So where your hair is like hair that a lot of people would consider quite desirable, would you feel like have you ever received backlash for your platform? Does that make sense? I'll ask that question backwards.
No, I agree. I don't feel like, the one thing that, I mean, Tree and I are two people, and we always say this, like, we dare people to come try it, because there's two of us. And I feel like with the intention of our platform, it's never to make people feel worse for what they have. It's to, the nature of our platform is that we have two different hair textures. So you either find inspiration in Tree or you find inspiration in me. And we're always talking to people. When people do like make those comments, like, I want texture like you, I say, no, your hair texture is beautiful and you should empower yourself to embrace what you have. It's the same with Tree as well. Like, when she's got a lot of volume in her hair, a lot of thickness in her hair as well. So it's not just even just about the texture sometimes. So I don't think we've ever received backlash. Mm-hmm. I think one person, I'll never forget this, one person commented saying my hair was a wig. And I had a whole fight on the way to work on Instagram with that person. And she was like, you're still going? I'm like, yeah, because they got to learn. But other than that, nothing really outrageous, no.
I just wanted to go back to what Shan was saying about kind of having conversations with people around, with women or other women around their hair, right? Because I think, so just as an example, I have a girlfriend who also, I've never seen her real hair up until lockdown, right? And for me, it was, and I know who she is, like, I know she's very proud of who she is and her hair and everything else. And I don't make any assumptions as to why I've never seen her hair. But for me, when she did take her hair out or take her braids out, for me, it was about normalizing the fact that she's allowed to switch up her hair. And so I didn't have that discussion or I didn't make comments on it because I didn't want it to be a thing like, oh my God, you've made this transition. What brought about this change? And so I'm just like, you know, is there ever a time where we just normalize people doing whatever the fuck they want to do with their hair, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of another curveball question. So I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a conversation on Twitter that involved Emma DeBerry around hair and hair in schools and kids not being asked to conform their hair. And somebody actually responded. I think her comment was around, you know, no one would ever ask a child to bleach their skin. So why would you ask someone to change their hair or to conform to traditional hairstyles? And somebody actually said, I would. So there are people who would actually ask you to bleach your skin, and colorism is a real thing. And so in terms of like the hair journey, is colorism ever something that comes into play for you guys in terms of addressing kind of the experiences of darker skinned women who also have natural hair on that process and the nuances of that experience?
Well, I didn't see that comment. But I think, yeah, in the natural hair space, especially like we've been operating this space for like 6 years now. So I think, especially in the UK, just in general, you will typically see like lighter skin influencers just promoted a bit more when it comes to like natural hair and natural hair care. And typically we see a lot of them having like a looser texture. Like, I just wish we would see like more darker skinned women in general. And that definitely became a whole thing. I can't remember how long ago it was, but there was this whole period where like people were making like YouTube videos about like leaving the natural hair scene and leaving the natural hair space because of like texturism, but also colorism as well. And people were just completely bored of it. And that actually brought up, like, it was off the back of that conversation, which is why we created our book Kink, which celebrated women who were underrepresented within the space. So it was like there was these subcategories within natural hair, and that was starting to form. So even with kink, you know, we were celebrating women with darker skin tones and with kinkier textures, hence why it's called kink. And also with locks, like a lot of people weren't talking about locks at all. That was like completely just like erased from the talk of hair and natural hair. So that was definitely like very, very prominent within the space. And I feel like, to be honest, you still see it now. What's really changed, if we're being honest? Like, do you know what I mean?
No. And we're obviously, Tree and I are not the darkest of the dark, like, in terms of our skin tone. So we've always tried to be proactive in having these conversations and talking about colorism, because if you, you know, the lighter you are on the spectrum, I feel like the more you should talk about it because you have a privilege. And so we've always been quite proactive about talking about it on our platform. But yeah, like if you think about it today, and the thing is, it's not just followers, it's not just likes, it's actually campaigns. It's things that change your life. You know, if you think about some of the top hair influencers and in terms of the scene, a lot of them are light-skinned or biracial, and they have a type 3 texture, and therefore off of the back of natural hair they've been able to do other things in life. It's literally affecting people's livelihood, and it's no wonder some people left the scene, because if you're getting passed up for campaigns and you're getting passed up for things that will change your life and in doing the stuff that you love, I would be frustrated as well.
Do you have any advice for any listeners who maybe are sort of fresh on their natural hair journey? They just want some advice about, you know, how do I go about trying to label my hair? What's useful? Like, what are the do's and don'ts? Like, what would be your top tips for anyone who's new to this kind of thing?
What are the top tips? I feel like we haven't done top tips in a while, right?
That's why it shot me through. We should feel me for a job.
I think it's because they've changed over time. Like, our top tips kind of developed over time. I think that's kind of why we both just went, recent top tips?
I would say porosity, innit, Tree? That's the main thing that you should know when it comes, because that affects your whole hair routine.
What is that? Sorry?
Your hair porosity.
Excuse me, let me Google.
Yeah, what does that mean?
So it's how quickly your hair is penetrated by water. So for instance, I have high porosity hair, so my hair gets wet easily but also loses moisture easily. And so Tree has low porosity hair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so
my hair retains moisture longer, basically. Mm.
So knowing that basic fact will help you do your hair routine. I'm not talking, like, that's why when you said labels with like type 3 and type 4, we don't really use that. It's more about the qualities that your hair
has. Yeah, because I guess that doesn't really help when it comes to your actual hair care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So for me, like, because my hair retains moisture quite well, I don't need to go in with all the layers. Like, sometimes you'll watch a YouTube video and they use this product, a leave-in, and then a cream, and then a butter, and then a gel. Like, do you know what I mean? Whereas, like, I don't need... Sometimes, like, Jay might need to go in with the layers because it's harder for her hair to, like, retain the moisture. But for my hair, and because of the porosity, I don't need to go in with so many layers. Like, I can literally just use, like, a moisture, like a cream or something, and then a bit of oil. And literally a bit, and then I'm good. Like, I would use a little bit, where Jay would probably use half the tub, like, for her hair. And that's more to do with our porosity as opposed to our hair type 3 or type 4. It's really to do with that, you know?
This might sound silly, but how would I know which one I'm on? Because, so my hair was permed, and then I basically just stopped perming it. But then I consciously made the effort to, like, cut it all off. In like March, just before lockdown, basically, and I think it was in January actually. And I've just started getting used to different products because obviously my hair texture is a lot thicker now. It's very different. So I was using like Cantu, and it's not to slag off any brand, but I've been using Cantu, and I've seen people online saying Cantu dries out your hair, Cantu does this, Cantu does that, and now I'm like, I don't know if it's good for my hair or not good for my hair, and I'm so confused. And I feel like what you're talking about now is the reason why I'm confused, because I don't know how often I'm meant to be using it for it to be normal. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
And I think firstly, it's not a stupid question. Secondly, your hair will change. So especially as you've like cut, so I think you said you cut quite a bit off, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like your hair texture will change. So I think like the whole sort of experiment phase, like you're going to have to go through that. So no matter what we say now anyway, like you are going to have to experiment with your hair because your texture will change as it grows and as like the regrowth comes from, you know, like, especially if it's not something that you've experienced before, like you will have to experiment for sure. So that's like the second thing I would say. But also, I mean, the third thing, yeah, we don't use Cantu. I haven't necessarily had the best experiences with Cantu. So maybe that is just a thing across the board if so many people are saying it. But anyway. but yeah, I mean, what is the official way to test your porosity? I don't know, because I know there is like the cup test, but people are saying that it's just not really accurate. For me, like, I just did the test of like spraying water on, like, with a spray bottle, and I just like just had my hair out and I sprayed water on my hair and sort of just I waited to see like how long that took to dry, and like sometimes you can see like the water literally sitting on your hair, or sometimes actually absorbing your hair. So there are different ways you can kind of test it. Like I said, some people might know what it is by doing that cup test, if you know what I'm referring to, but they get a strand of hair and just let it float. But I don't think that's as accurate. And I think also the way, like, so for example, the way my sister sort of worked out, even though she didn't necessarily know like the terminology about like porosity, high, low, all that kind of stuff, she just always knew that after she washed her hair and when she let it air dry, her hair would dry really quickly. And there's some people, when you wash your hair, you know, like for hours and your hair's still wet, it's like that already can sort of tell you if your hair dries really quickly, then yeah, your hair kind of absorbs that dries out, sorry, doesn't retain the moisture very well. So yeah, it's just, there's a few ways to kind of learn, but it's just about paying attention, I guess. It's really like paying attention to how, what your hair likes and how it operates. So I don't know if that's really helpful, but
do you guys have a favorite product that you like, your, that you have to use, that you like to use, or that a bit too hard?
It always changes, I'm not gonna lie, it does always change. I think at the moment I am probably really loving Diva Curls.
I was going to say Diva Curl.
But also, I think if I was going to list a few brands, just in terms of like their whole range, I do like Camille Rose.
Yeah.
And I do really like, who else I like? As I Am.
Yeah.
I like As I Am.
As I Am.
Mm-hmm. And the last one I would say, yeah, so I'm looking at my product drawer. I also like Design Essentials.
Yeah. I would add to that Big Hair. I love Big Hair's products. Camille Rose and Big Hair are black owned, and so Design Essentials. And another one, Trepidora. I like Trepidora's products. Another black owned brand here in the UK. Equi Botanics. I love Equi Botanics. Leave In. Ah, oh, that is beautiful. That is so nice. Afrocentrics, I love their shampoo because it's so fresh.
Yeah, their shampoo is so good. I literally just used that last time I washed my hair.
So there's so many brands. We have videos on this, ladies. Just
I'll be sharing the video on our post when we post this podcast, because I've just put in the group chat every single thing you just said.
We actually do I know I watch a lot of your videos, and it's funny that one of the things that I've noticed is how useful products are in different ways. Like, I've been watching the Palmer stuff that you guys have been doing, and how it's good for your hair, but it's good for your skin, but it's good for you. So it's really interesting to see how many products can be used in so many different ways, especially because some products are so expensive, and so you want to kind of use it as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, because you can wind up spending, I know, obviously, especially like Shan, I'm sure you probably know, like embarking on this journey, and it's just like, where do you start, all the products, like there's just so much, so I get that it can be really overwhelming. But sometimes for me as well,
you took the word out of my mouth.
It is really overwhelming, but at the same time, it is just like, sometimes I like to just go back to basics sometimes. Like, I remember when I was just like, okay, let me just start from scratch. Like, it was just a case of using natural oils, like using castor oils, For me, I realized that at one stage I really wanted to use like heavy butter, so I would use a lot of like shea butter and stuff like that, like just kind of using natural stuff until I felt like comfortable spending hella money, you know.
There's also like options like subscription boxes that will give you products where, you know, they've worked with the brand and you can get a taste of that product, and therefore so you get like a fraction of the price of buying the whole range. And so obviously if you don't want it every month, that's a bit different, but at least they give you an option of trying a brand out at a fraction of the price, and you still can figure out, oh, do I like this one, do I not like this one, and then you can go out and buy it yourself, which is, I think, is a really great selling point of subscription boxes out there. Like Treasure Trust is a really good one.
Amazing. I guess you guys have given so many good tips about it's particularly in the last couple of minutes for people who are, as you said, kind of going through the process of loving their natural hair and embracing it and kind of transitioning. Do you guys have any other advice for, particularly for young girls who are on that process of just learning how to love their hair and love themselves?
Have fun and being different. I think that's the main thing. Standing out is so much better than blending in. And that's something you learn as you grow older, but at a young age, standing out just is so much better because you feel so much more comfortable in who you are, and you get to experiment. You know, you don't have to be, you can have braids one day, you can have hair paint and have purple hair the next day. You know, you can do so many different things. And I just say, have fun with it and don't feel ashamed of who you are. And don't feel ashamed of experimenting at the same time. Change it up, stay the same, mix it up all the time. I think that's the best thing that I would say. You don't have to be fully formed at 15. That's the time to experiment.
True.
Yeah, because I definitely experimented. So go ahead and experiment. And just kind of highlighting that our hair is so versatile. So like Jay said, have fun with it. There's so much we could do with our hair. So it's not always about just following one type of look. But also just try your best. I'm just speaking from experience. Try your best to practice like healthy hair practices. So not worrying about length all the time, but I just focusing on the health of your hair. So like protective styling is just something good to sort of think about, and you can create so many different styles with things like that. So yeah, healthy hair wins all the time.
So guys, Jayatree, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. I think we've learned so much, and I think it's really important for us to have this discussion, particularly in light of kind of not just what's been happening recently, but just in terms of the general issues of discrimination that we face, both Black men and women, around our hair, from the Jamaica schools issue to schools in England, also having an issue with sending kids home, and just all of the different backlash that we receive as Black women and Black men about our hair. And so I'm so appreciative. We're so appreciative of the platform that you guys have and all of the work that you guys do. Tell us what you have coming up and what you have planned just moving forward. Post-COVID, during COVID?
Yeah, I think coming up we have a lot more that's just also outside of hair care. So we'll be doing a lot of like skincare content as well, and just sort of, and beauty content, just showing like there are different you know, content that you can consume as Black women for beauty, and it's not always like one type of look. So yeah, I think we really enjoy doing that type of content as well.
So thanks so much for listening, guys. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get them from. On Twitter and Facebook, we're Dope Black Woman. And on Instagram, we are Dope Black Woman 1. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically Black.
All the way Black.
Blackly Black.
Blacktacular.
Black and beautiful.
Hey!